Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
And I'm Brittany Pacheco, and we are the two Watchers in the Basement today.
That's right, Brittany. Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We're here today to talk about the second episode of the HBO series, The Last of Us. The title of the episode is Infected. And before we dig into the episode, let's get overall thoughts. Brittany, what were your overall thoughts of the second episode?
So my overall thoughts, still F those broccoli face mother effers. My goodness. No, we saw way more of them in detail. The prosthetics look incredible. Like the amount of creativity that goes into developing these prosthetics based on a video game, but then like to elevate it that much more and make it very lifelike. I mean, you look at the detail and you think, okay, that really does look like fungi. But the function of just scaring you to pieces. I mean, Justin, I literally was like this with my hoodie and like kind of watching through the little slits of what I could see because they're scary looking to me. I don't like zombies. I don't like stuff like this.
Yeah.
But what I do like is the story. They tell an incredible story. The visuals are incredible. And what I really appreciate is the pace of how the story is progressing and then the amount of information that we're getting in each episode so far. It is quite easy to follow for someone like you and myself who have not played the video game and have no idea what's going on with this whole storyline and these characters.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts?
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I continue to love the pacing of the show. They give us like the perfect amount of, you know, story of character development. There's very few characters to follow, which is nice. I guess Luna has her thoughts on The Last of Us also.
Luna's still not a fan, man.
Not a fan.
She didn't like the old lady in the first episode, and she's probably not fond that we're talking about this.
I think it's the week to week. She likes the binge model, and she doesn't like to wait.
This week she slipped through it, thankfully.
Right. No, but like I think it's a good dose of what they're giving us each week, where it's not too much. I think if there was a lot of lore every week, and a lot of terms and a lot of characters, it might get to where, you know, it gets confusing or you're like, I don't know if I really want to follow this, but the way they're doing it, they're telling us a very interesting, entertaining story, like very carefully. And they're giving us just enough to where we're interested to come back for the next week. So, episode two, I think was really a solid, you know, building off the first episode, it just keeps building on. And I think this show is really, I think it's really special. And I think that a lot of people were watching it. It was last week, there was a story that came out that said it had the second highest debut on HBO Max right behind House of the Dragon. Yeah. So obviously it's very popular. And I think that I read today that the first episode has had like 18 million viewers, and like apparently the second episode has more views than the first episode. So
It's
definitely becoming a popular show. So let's get into what we learned in this episode. I think that's really important for me and you, and maybe for a lot of our audience who hasn't played the games like we haven't. Let's talk about what we learned. And so first thing we learned is that those who are infected with this cordyceps fungus, especially the ones who their eyes and forehead and top of their head are covered, as you call them, the broccoli heads, they're actually broccoli face. Yeah. They're actually called clickers. The term is clickers. They are blind. Not surprisingly, they're blind because obviously their eyes are covered, but they have very good hearing.
Yeah.
We also found out that they're all connected, which is kind of creepy. The fact that this fungus can, through these, the technical term, I think, is mycelium tendrils. They're connected. Like the fungus can live underground, and all of these, you know, undead can be connected. And if you simply step on, you know, if you interact with one of them, it can awaken all of them or several of them. They can all come after you. So I think that's a pretty cool touch to this, this storyline. What'd you think about the clickers and what we saw in this episode?
Shivers. I absolutely hate the sound of clickers, and it's something that's used in a lot of horror, thriller, suspenseful movies and shows. We talked offline, Justin, about one of the monsters in the Netflix show The Witcher, and when Geralt has to go and fight this monster, she makes the same sound. It's oh my gosh, the monster name eludes me, but it makes the same sound. It just creeps me out, and it achieves the effect that it wants to give to its audience, and that's just, it's creepy. You know something bad around the corner is coming. It's gonna get you. There's no escaping it without being harmed or unharmed or whatever. And I hate that sound. Absolutely hate the sound. Yeah, the clicking just freaks me out. But with the explanation of the fungus and how it is like a network amongst those who are infected,
right?
Learning that it was something slightly deviated from the game to make it a little bit more plausible, I think a little bit more realistic, which in this day and age of living in a pandemic for the last almost 3 years, you start thinking, okay, you know that they were producing this show way before the pandemic even began, right? Like they just in talks with the studios, et cetera. But for the time and place of release while we live in this pandemic, and then you think, oh crap, maybe we have to worry about fungus in the near future and how that could impact the worldwide population. The intro scene of this episode starts in Indonesia. You bring in a professor of mycology. I could be mispronouncing that. Don't come at me, people. But when she's evaluating the deceased body that still has a living fungus, organism, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. it freaks her the F out. And she tells the Indonesian official, who asks, what do we need to do? If there's no vaccine, there's no medication. She said, bomb this place. And that to me is terrifying. When you know you can't outrun nature and that's the last resort, that's terrifying. But again, they achieved the effect that they wanted to give to the audience, and that's to like terrify you. And I was terrified throughout the whole episode. Man.
Yeah, the you know, when she says the bomb, it's like, you know, that's what they end up doing. They mm-hmm. as they explain later on, that they bomb cities to slow the spread. And later on, when we see them in present day, or you know, 2023 Boston in the show, that, you know, they were saying that, you know, a lot of cities, it didn't stop it, but in Boston, for whatever reason, it kind of did.
The bombing slowed it
was
down.
It was more effective.
Mm-hmm. Still, I mean, with the effect of the infected, and again, with the amount of information that we got in this episode, I know in the premiere, I said it was kind of slow paced, because I wasn't getting that information. But now that we've established the characters, to me, it's not paced so slow, because even in the down times when Ellie and Joel are just kind of waiting around, you see their interaction and you see how that relationship is going to be so important in the coming episodes. So I've overall, like, story development, character development, mm-hmm. and understanding this world, I'm really enjoying it. I just hate those broccoli faced motherfuckers.
Yeah, but you know, you keep saying broccoli faced, but they're not green.
No, it's just the closest thing. I mean, I originally said cauliflower, and then I went to broccoli because that's the only thing on emoji that is very similar. One could argue it kind of has like a bloom of a coral, like coral in the sea. But again, it's a fungus. So you look at fungi on trees and things like that. Obviously, that's the look that they're trying to go for. But the way it blooms just across the face, it's, to me, it comes off more like vegetable.
Yeah. you know, something else we learned in this episode, we learned that Ellie is immune. She's immune to the, to being affected.
Yep.
We saw in the last episode, the first episode of the series, she had, you know, marks on her arms, or I guess, was it a bite mark? Is that what it was?
She ended up telling Joel and Tess that she had been bitten because once she woke up from sleeping, she, you know, she's asked, like, why are you so special? Why is it so important to get you to go west? What happened to you? And she, so she tells him that she had gone down into a tunnel that was supposed to be completely blocked off. No one can access it. And she somehow did and encountered one of these infected people and got bit, but she never turned because it happens within like a matter of, I guess, hours or days. Mm-hmm. And she never turned. The only thing that's left on her body is like a scar, if you will. And she, yeah, she's immune, which to me from the get-go, it's like, okay, well, she's like either the cure or, you know, something that's going to hopefully provide some sort of vaccination for the rest of the world. But, and that's also based, I'm sure, on truth that's happened in real life. And that's a separate topic for a separate day. But anyway,
do you think she's immune because she's been experimented on? Like in the quarantine zone, is that part of it, you think? Because I don't know the answer.
I don't know the answer either. Yeah. And I think from what little we gathered when we spoke with Tristan and Frank in the premiere episode of this new show, that yes, Ellie has been somewhere, but then she was taken from that facility to where we first meet her with Marlene. So one would deduce that she's been experimented on, or because of learning she did not turn after being bitten, it's like, okay, now we need to take her somewhere and figure out why and how can this help like the rest of the human race, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if she had been experimented on, like, at all. It's just she hasn't been very forthcoming about her past.
Right. And then we see in this episode, she gets bit again. And so, you know, obviously she's definitely immune.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even before she's bitten in this episode, Tess realizes that, you know, this girl is kind of a little bit of hope for the world. And so she, you know, Tess, you know, encourages Joel to take her, you know, to this Firefly base camp that's somewhere west.
Mm-hmm.
So that she can, you know, be seen by these doctors who are supposedly working on a vaccine or working on a cure for this.
Right.
And, you know, in doing so, we, you know, Tess herself gets bitten, which we get the reveal at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then she has to make a sacrifice kind of play.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty cool scene. What did you think about, you know, in this episode, we had two of these cases where the tendrils from the fungus are coming out of the person's mouth. And in Tess's demise, she is, you know, they're in this museum in Boston and they're just overrun with these infected, I guess cordyceps is what you could call them, or clickers. The clickers are in there.
Or the infected.
Yeah, the infected. Yeah, because some of them, it looks like they can see maybe.
I think there's probably just different developments of.
Right, right.
Once you're bitten and then how long it takes to before you be taken, deformed or what have you.
A clicker probably means you're like fully, you know, gone. I mean.
Maybe, I don't know. And if any of you out there who are watching this in the replay, please let us know as much information as possible, because Justin and I are a complete novice to The Last of Us when it comes down to these infected individuals, because there is a scene when they're trying to get through the hotel to cross the path to keep on going wherever they need to go. I mean, there's just a horde of these infected individuals, but they're not completely turned. They're just there until someone steps on a fungus from miles away and then they're activated, if you will. And the clickers, I'm assuming they're not completely formed either. They're just more developed than your freshly bitten infected.
I think we said it's a level, like a progression. The clickers are more down the road with the infection. But you know, Tess, the thing comes up to the infected thing, kiss her, and you know, the tendrils are going in her mouth. And the whole while she, you know, she's just dumped this gasoline everywhere in this, on the floor of this museum. She's trying to light her, get her igniter lighter. And then like the moment that the thing, like kind of open mouth kisses her, she hits the, you know, gets the igniter, you know, or gets her lighter to light up. Yeah. And then drops it. Boom. Blows up most of the museum, kills. I would think she killed several of the infected,
Yeah, I think she had also dumped, because the location you're talking about was kind of like the base of meeting the Fireflies, because they had the truck, or they had the means to be able to go west, and their whole thing was to get Ellie there. So they had like equipment inside, right? And I think she also knocked over like a container that had like maybe hand grenades or something like that, something to help the boom, if you will. Yeah. And that was cool, just because one, she has to make the ultimate sacrifice, because like you said, she got bitten. She reveals that to Joel and Ellie. And I felt for Tess for sure. I mean, we only got her in two episodes. And unless she somehow makes a miraculous escape, we're probably not going to see her ever again. But just in that short amount of time, her bonding with Ellie, and then it became even more pertinent for Tess to make sure that Ellie got to where she needs to go west, because now she was infected and she needed that glimmer of hope that this can be hopefully eradicated. Right. So wonderful performance by Anna Torv. Torv. Okay. Yeah. She gave a wonderful performance. I felt it, and I kind of like Game of Thrones, don't get attached to any one of these characters because they're probably not going to make it. Let's just be real. Yeah. But to see that whole scene, I mean, I'm cringing the entire time with this half, you know, fungi looking dude comes up to her. The tentacle things are coming out of his mouth, and I'm like, why? Like, why? And she's just standing there. Like, what could she do at that point? Right. She's got a mission. She achieved it and brought some of these infected down, hopefully. I mean, there's plenty more on the way, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised we lost her in this episode. I'm not surprised she died. I figured that was going to happen at some point, because, I mean, I do know The Last of Us is a story of Joel and Ellie. You know, like that's very clear from the video game, the marketing of the games and stuff like that. But I thought this Tess character would maybe make it midway through the season or something, because it seems like she knows, she believes in this mission way more than Joel does. Joel doesn't, I mean, he would be happy to return Ellie and just be done with her and then try to find his battery some other way so he can go get a, you know, get a car or a truck so he can go find his brother.
Right.
And Tess is, you know, she's a person, a character that we're led to believe has done some terrible things in her life. And obviously in this world, or this, you know, this fictional world, you know, it's hard to survive. And so she's done whatever it took to survive. But I think she also sees in Ellie that there's a chance that we could end this. And so she's all in on this mission, and she has to convince Joel to do that, you know, what, and it's still not clear that he believes it, and maybe he won't for a while.
Yeah. I think for Joel too, it's hard for him to see Ellie, because she's probably, so she says she's 14 years old. She's orphaned.
Right.
No one's coming to look for her. And probably for Joel, that's really difficult, because his daughter was more or less the same age when she died.
Right.
And I would think that his character is trying not to become emotionally connected to her, because her fate could be anything. I mean, she survived one bite, or now two, but that's not to say that in his mind, maybe that's not to say that she won't ever turn. And then he's got to deal with that. Like, could he kill her? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm getting ahead of myself probably, but like seeing just the emotional struggles, because there's some scenes where when Ellie's talking or just walking, you see him kind of like look after her. And there's just like this look about him of he probably doesn't think it's a good idea, of course, to travel west with her, but he doesn't want to get attached to her either.
Right.
Because of what happened with his daughter.
Yeah. I just wonder like where they're going. I mean, I guess Wyoming is maybe the destination or whatever, but I mean, like west of Boston could be, you know, a lot of states.
Yeah.
A lot of things are west of Boston. So
yeah.
I'm interested to see like, you know, how is the travel? I mean, you know, if you're going from Boston to Wyoming, it's a pretty good little journey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, talking New England to all the way to almost damn near the West Coast. So yeah, that's a journey in itself, you know, on foot or in a car, like it doesn't matter. That's quite the journey. And then, you know, we touched on this in the premiere episode of gasoline and just having the means to refuel. And if something breaks down or, you know, you just never know what pops up along the way. So I definitely feel we're in for a journey, and I'm just hoping there's not going to be like side quests. You know, I made that joke about the Mandalorian and not having to do something for somebody else before they can continue onward. Right. But with this episode, I really felt once again, that with the story development and the character development, it was all necessary. It wasn't like fluff or anything like that. Like, you had to understand what was happening to these characters in order for the next thing to happen in the coming episodes. So, because even when Joel has to pull Ellie away before the infected come to take the building, and Tess says she's going to stay behind me, Ellie was like trying to fight him, saying like, no, we're not leaving her. We're not going anywhere without her. And, you know, for someone who's been orphaned, who has no connections to anyone, I mean, she quickly bonded. And I'm sure that's going to be devastating for her. You know, is everyone that she comes in contact with going to die?
Yeah, it's interesting. This show, it seems like they're not skipping any steps. They're definitely, you know, taking their time, telling the story. And I don't think we're going to see a lot of side quests. Not that I know what any of those are anyway, but I think that, you know, the slower pace means they're trying to hit all the high points and like do it right. So
From what I understood and what I've seen on social is that the showrunners are being very faithful to that of the video game.
Particularly
the scene where we first see the clickers and the struggle of one point with Joel. He puts the flashlight in between his head and his shoulder, and he's trying to reload his gun. And someone on Twitter said, man, like, if you play the game, like, the amount of stress and anxiety you went through in order to reload your gun while you're trying to fight this damn clicker, like, it's real. And again, the showrunners, side-by-side comparison to that of the video game, like, these scenes are shot like spot on, frame for frame. It's incredible. And I think that's what I really appreciate when you have a source material, be it a video game or a book, and you can bring that to life and stay true to that source. That to me is going to sell me on the product. And I'm slowly becoming more sold on this show.
Well, it really helps the fact that Neil Druckmann, who wrote the story for The Last of Us and helped create the video game, also directed this episode. And he's one of the showrunners. So, you know, he knows this world better than anyone else. He created this world. So that's why we're seeing this like kind of perfect adaptation from a video game to a TV series. And even though, like we mentioned, there are slight changes, like with the fungus itself, like spread of it, they mentioned that, you know, in the video game, the fungus is spread via someone biting you through like saliva, or it's also just spread through the air through spores. And in the video game, the characters are often wearing, like, you know, gas masks or whatever to protect from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, for the TV show, that wouldn't be effective to have to do that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they've come up with the, you know, the fact that the fungus is, it's like this network and it's all connected.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time you interact with one of them, that could trigger 100 more or whatever. So,
right.
I think that's a very smart change.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when you have to take a little bit of creative liberty in order to make sense of how things work, that's fine.
Yeah.
As long as you make it make sense and, right. and it's not something, mystical or just, you know, just because I felt like it, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like, when you can tie it into like a real world and make it believable, you do your homework and you bring it into the show. Like, again, that's going to sell me on the product. And like I said, this to me is just a terrifying idea of what are the chances this could actually happen in the coming years? And I will be the first to say, I just hope it happens after my lifetime.
Or not at all.
But, you know, if it's going to happen, I said it before and I still can't remember the philosopher who said it, that the world will return to its natural state.
Right.
In other words, we're going to be eliminated one way or another. Bomb, apocalypse, one way or another.
Fungus, yeah.
Fungus. I just hope it's after my lifetime because I'd rather not suffer. But if it's going to happen during my lifetime, just be quick about it. Just be quick.
Yeah, exactly. I got you. So looking ahead, episode 3 is coming up. And from what I've read and heard, the episode 3 is like a critical favorite. The critics really like this episode. And I think it's kind of the way I heard it, like, was like, if you're not hooked right now, you will be hooked after episode 3. And we saw the little teaser trailer after last night's episode. And we see a lot of Nick Offerman. He's going to be a big character in the series, or at least in the third episode. So that'll be interesting to see what happens with
him. It's wild to me.
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, I think I've maybe seen one episode of Parks and Rec, but like, I kind of just see him as a comedian type actor, maybe not so serious.
Right.
So for me personally, it's going to be interesting to see his performance in this, you know, sort of drama series. Yeah. And he looks like he's got it made though.
Yeah, it looks like he's got it figured out. It seems like he has like a compound with a fenced in compound where he's still like living his life as if not a lot has changed, where obviously the whole world has changed significantly. So,
but is it above ground or is it underground? It was hard to tell.
Yeah, it's a question. It seems like he knows Joel from somewhere. So that'll be cool to see. Joel interact with someone else who maybe is a friend out there, because he doesn't have a lot of friends right now. It seems like he's looking for his brother, who he had a falling out with his brother, which I wonder when we'll see Tommy again. Probably not till, you know, a couple episodes, I would think, depending on where he is. If we see him again, who knows? Maybe
he
got, you know, so
not knowing how far Nick Offerman's compound is from Boston, if it's still within the New England area, or you know, between episode 2 and episode 3, they've traveled hundreds of miles to a completely different state. You know, it's hopefully we'll find out. I would be a little disappointed if they just kind of miraculously, like, boom, we've traveled, you know, 4 states and we're closer to Wyoming than ever.
I mean, it would be nice if he was located in Pawnee, Indiana, as a tribute to to Parks and Rec, because that's where Parks and Rec was located, to Ron Swanson himself. But probably not. Probably. I think he's somewhere out west.
Too on the nose.
Yeah, that'd be too on the nose. It'd be awesome, but
that would be funny. Yeah. It'd be great. Yeah. So, yeah, no, I'm looking forward to episode 3 for sure. I mean, based on what you said, if it's supposedly going to make you really get hooked to the show, then I just don't want to see any more clickers.
Well,
I'm over it.
I think you're going to see a lot more.
Damn it.
Yeah. I mean, if you watched after the episode, they talked about all the time they spent with the prosthetics and making these things and making them true to the video game. So yeah, they're not one and done. We're going to see a lot of these characters, I would think, probably whatever the next level is after that too. You know, we don't know what that is. Is it a super clicker? Is it like the Incredible Hulk of clickers? Is it?
It's probably going to be like an Incredible Hulk of clickers, because I think I remember seeing a cutaway scene of someone emerging and there was like fire and he just looked massive and full of the fungus. And I'm like, oh God.
Yeah. You wonder if the next step is like they Voltron it where four or five of them combine into one giant organism or something to fight.
Gross.
We'll see.
I hope not.
So Brittany, any final thoughts on episode two, The Last of Us?
Considering there wasn't a whole lot that happened. I mean, a good majority of the episode was like a lot of walking. It was kind of like reading Tolkien again. I mean, one can only describe walking so much. But to see the interactions that these three characters have, like with one another, and then of course the scary parts were scary for me. Like I said, I was you know, like peeking out of my hoodie the entire time and like ears covered because I don't like the sound. I actually really did enjoy this episode. Story progression, character progression, the information that we got, and to put it in a way where it was easy to understand and follow and, you know, keep up with it as a non gamer for this game. So yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this episode and I'm glad it's not like a continuous slow burn like other shows that I've watched have been. So what about you?
Yeah, no, I'm really enjoying the show. You know, I was pretty interested before it came out. And so I don't think it hasn't disappointed by any stretch. And I think the game or the show is kind of making me want to play the game. And I'm not the only one, because apparently the video game sales are spiking.
Yep.
Which I guess that's not a surprise, but I think maybe after the season's over, maybe I'll get that itch to play the first Last of Us and check it out and see, like, you know, the comparisons from my own point of view.
You're not the only one. John's been talking about getting a PlayStation now, and you know, he's been a long dedicated Xbox player and PC player, but he's now pretty sure he's gonna get a PS5 at some point and then get the game and play it probably when he's done with his masters. But yeah, it was a great episode. And shout out to Marcy here in the chat. Yep. She's our fellow watcher. Appreciate you being here. She says, really great analysis. So yes, Marcy, just stay away from the clickers. You start hearing clicking, girl, run. Don't look back.
I do like that clickers is like a very simple, like it's not like some crazy, like made up name. It's like, I don't know. I think it's like, I think they did a good job with naming them that.
Mm-hmm.
Very like basic elemental kind of thing. So
yeah. And I think that derives from the video game in itself. So carrying over these elements, keeping true to the source material, like it's a big win for me.
Yeah. So now you know what we think about The Last of Us episode two. We want to know what you think. And we'd like for you to tell us via social media. Brittany, how can people find us on social media?
Well, like you're here now on YouTube. Subscribe if you already haven't. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your coworkers, tell people on the street. Click subscribe.
Clickers. We're the clickers. Yeah. The only clickers we care about, are the ones below the, you know, this
freaking
video.
Hate you. Yeah. God. Click the subscribe button, click the like button on this video. We do encourage everyone to join us in the live chat here. That way we can answer your questions live. And for those who are watching in the replay, leave us a comment in the comment section down below. But we also encourage everyone to go follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search at Watchers Basement. Use that same name or handle, if you will, for the hashtag to help grow our audience. Send us articles, send us memes, send us things that you want us to review that we haven't already. We'd love for you to do that. And lastly, we also have audio podcasts available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, thanks to Anchor.fm. Please give us a 5-star rating or 5 clicks. That's fine. We'd really appreciate it. And back to you, Justin.
Thank you, Brittany. So for Brittany, this is Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week when we're back to talk about episode 3 of The Last of Us. Goodbye.